All right, look at this delightful bunch of ladies that are sitting across from me.
Aww.
Ready for Pet Chat once again. Dr. Kimberly Earle, nice to see you. It's been a bit.
Yes, thanks.
And also Cheryl Shaw. Cheryl, g'day.
Hello.
Now I'm checking out the brooch. You always have to do that.
Yep.
And a pretty simple one today. You have a cane toad.
I know. It's not very nice, is it?
So we're looking forward to talking about that. Well, not really. We wish we didn't have to.
Yeah, but we need to just make pet owners aware that cane toads are around, so we'll get into that.
They've been spotted in the Hunter yet again just recently, the not-so-humble cane toad.
Oh, yes, there's such a worry, Mark. The trouble is that with dogs and cats, because they're so inquisitive and cane toad toxin is so really severe, it doesn't take much for a cane toad to wipe out our cats and dogs. So what we need to do is be mindful. If you do suspect that your cat or your dog is playing in an area and you think that, you know, it's just having fun there, go and check it out, particularly at the moment where we know there are cane toads in our areas. There's been some spotted at Waratah. What we need to do is make sure that our pets are safe. So if they're in an area, you know, they might be with a cat, it might be sort of hitting something with its paw. If it does hit a cane toad, unfortunately that toxin that they have that secretes out of their side of their cheeks, what happens with that? That can get onto the cat's paw, but also cane toads. I'm a bit tongue tied today. Cane toads.
The toxin hasn't got you yet, Joe.
I hope not. I've been paralysed from the throat up. The cane toad can actually secrete out their toxin can go quite a several metres. So we need to make sure that the pets aren't getting sprayed with that toxin as well. The other thing is with dogs, dogs tend to mouth things, so they will actually try to pick up a cane toad, and then that horrible toxin is going to be in their mouth. Now, Kimberly, with cane toad toxicity, it's really quick acting, isn't it?
Yeah, it can be really, really fast. So we want to, like, wash out their mouth and get them into a vet. Because it can cause respiratory paralysis pretty quickly, so it's not a very nice thing for them to get. So
And if you think about cane toads, they like the environments that snakes like. So they like to be around wood piles. They like to be under pots and around pot plants, and in that sort of same environment. So you know, if you're thinking about, yeah, my dog doesn't normally go over that space, but now it's there, it may be able to be aware that the cane toad is there. And cane toads can get so large. I mean, they will eat anything that can fit in their mouth, and their mouths are huge. A female can weigh up to 2.5 kilos. So, I mean, that's a pretty massive cane toad.
That's
big.
I can't even imagine that.
No, it's hard to imagine. But, look, I'm just really concerned that obviously we want to protect our pets. If you do suspect that it's been a cane toad, like Kimberly said, you know, rinse the mouth, but get to the vet straight away.
Yeah, I wouldn't waste a bunch of time.
No.
But if you can, just, you know.
Yeah, because I just think that's the importance of this is that it is so quick. And because we're not used to having these pests in our environment, we don't often think about a cane toad being a problem. My message today is make sure you're checking what your pet's playing with in the garden. And if you do see a cane toad, it is so important to report that to the authorities as well. So the Department of Primary Industry is who to contact, and they will come to you and remove the frogs and or toads.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they can lay so many eggs. So, you know, if you just have one in your environment for a little time, a female can lay between 20 to 40,000 eggs in one season. So imagine how quickly these can, you know, just become a problem overnight in our area.
Do we suspect that most of them are hitchhikers, or they're just naturally just as they started in Queensland, they just gradually just move here, but
I think the thought still is that most of them are hitchhikers, that there's not an actual incursion as such. You know, they're not sort of like coming swarming across the borders into the Hunter region. But, you know, we had one, somebody brought one into our clinic maybe 2 years ago, and there's been a couple more. So, yeah, I think it's going to happen more and more often, and you just have to stay vigilant.
Yes, I think that's the answer, being vigilant with your pets. And if, you know, you do notice something like this, just don't ignore it. It's so important to, you know, contact the authorities and try to help eradicate these pests.
Yeah, it is one of those better safe than sorry kind of scenarios, that's for sure. 4921 6216 if you have a question for our Pet Chat team today. G'day, Stephen there at New Lambton. You've got a particular fungi growing in the yard and you're wanting to check to see how toxic it might be to your dogs. What's going on, Stephen? What have you got?
Yeah, well, just in the last week, I've noticed a... it's really weird. It's a red and orange tip fungi. I've been on to Google and they've told me it breaks down and starts to smell like meat, which attracts dogs.
Right.
And I've never... I'm just wondering if you've come across this before other times in your career.
Not that specific fungus. Like, presumably, we're talking like this is a mushroom, like a raised mushroom growing out of the grass, or...
Well, it looks alien-like. It's just like a... Honestly, I've never seen anything like it, and Google just says...
It's a stinkhorn? The stinkhorn?
That might be it.
Yeah. Yeah. So stinkhorns do give out an odour like rotten meat.
Right.
And they love the environment that we're having with the high humidity and a little bit of rain. They just pop up everywhere.
Right.
Yeah, it is a good idea to remove them because that they do tend to attract the dogs, but also they attract flies and things like that as well. So,
Right.
So my general recommendation is if you see, you know, mushrooms, fungi growing in the backyard is to, you know, pull them, get rid of them. We certainly do see dogs that will eat them. There's so many different species and different types. I'm not an expert, but we absolutely will see some dogs who become, you know, apparently very sick due to it. And typically liver stress, liver disease is what we would sort of see.
Yeah.
Most of the time it's, you know, relatively short-lived. They come in, they have some vomiting and diarrhea, and if we test their bloods, we can see that they have some elevated liver enzymes. And the majority of them will get better with some supportive care. But I think there's just so much variation. I wouldn't risk it, so I would try to get rid of it if you can.
Yeah, it just says put hot water on it, bleach, and then underneath there's eggs. You've got to pull it up and get the eggs out as well.
That sounds exciting. Yeah, God.
I've just seen this. Like, I've been here for 13 years and I don't know, I didn't know if it's the environment because we've had a wettish
sort. So much wet, yeah.
Okay, thank you very much for your help.
Good luck with it.
Kimberly, we'd love to get to a topic that you didn't quite get enough time to look at the last time you were here.
Yeah, so last time we ended up getting some good phone calls, which is always good, but we were going to talk about geriatric vestibular syndrome or vestibular disease in dogs. And I think this is an important topic because when you have an older dog, so it's usually dogs who are, you know, 8 to 10 years of age or older, and it people always think, pet owners always think that their pet's having a stroke. These dogs they'll wake up in the morning or sometimes they come home from work in the afternoon and the dog is doing all sorts of weird neurological things. Oftentimes they've got a head tilt, so they can't straighten their head. Their head is tilted to the side. They may be circling around or they may not even be able to get up. A lot of times they're not able to get up. These dogs are really, really dizzy. And for us as humans, the first thing we think is, oh my gosh, my dog has had a stroke. And it's actually not that bad. We do occasionally see strokes in dogs, but there's no smoking dogs in the world. Like, they just, it's not a problem that we see, you know, that
not a lot of
strokes. Yeah, it's not really a very common thing. But vestibular disease is a syndrome that's really, really dramatic. So it's very scary as a dog owner to come home and see your dog or wake up and see your dog in some distress. Sometimes they're vomiting. Sometimes the really bad ones are rolling. Like, they literally can't keep their feet underneath them or they can't even sometimes stay on their chest. You know, they can't stay upright. And we often have to reassure owners, you know, that actually this is something that's going to get better. So what happens in these dogs is that their balance organ and balance system, their vestibular system in their middle ear, as you get older, there's fluid in there and there are these little fine hairs. And if you think about an ocean bed of seaweed and as the current's going, the seaweed is sort of swaying from side to side. As the dogs get older, these hairs become more brittle. So instead of flowing and waving from side to side, they're a little bit more stiff. And sometimes they get a little bit crystallized or calcified, and they can break. And when that happens, all of a sudden, those are little sensors, and they're helping the dog to identify which way is up. And so if a bunch of those little hairs break off, which they sometimes do quite suddenly, then all of a sudden the dog's balance is totally thrown for a loop, okay? So like humans will sometimes get vertigo due to various different things, but this is your dog getting vertigo because its brain is no longer able to tell which way is up because those little wavy hairs have been broken off inside their inner ear. And that itself is not really painful, but we get this horrible dizziness, and these dogs are really in sometimes in a little bit of distress. Sometimes the dogs don't care that much, but they're vomiting and they're, you know, they're pretty like, you know, out of it. And it can be so dramatic that we have, you know, clients who sort of go, oh my God, I think I need to, you know, euthanize my dog. And the good news is that almost all of these dogs will recover, almost always back to 100%, but usually to at least, you know, 75 to 80%. It can take quite a while, though. So we usually will see some pretty good improvement within 3 to 5 to 7 days. But some dogs will take, you know, 2 to 3 weeks to really get back up and going. And we can help to support them. Sometimes they can't eat because they're so nauseous from the dizziness. We can help them with IV fluids. We can give them anti-nausea medications. Sometimes it's really about removing the dog from the presence of the owner, because as an owner, it can be quite distressful to watch that. And if we just take the dog away, put them into hospital, give them some really good, careful, supportive care. They're not actually in a very dangerous situation. We just have to wait it out. And the brain, due to the plasticity of the brain, over time, the brain just sort of goes, okay, all right, now I can see I'm supposed to be up this way. And these dogs, their heads straighten up. They start to be able to get their balance back. Their feet come underneath them. The nausea goes away. And most of the time, they make a complete recovery. But if you were just looking at that and going, oh, it's my old dog, it's time to euthanize it, like today's the day, you know, I want people to keep an open mind about the fact that actually it may not be that dire.
Tell you what, living beings are just built funny, aren't we all?
Yeah, like, yeah, for sure.
Like these little hairs swaying, you know, almost swaying to the music, if you will.
Yeah.
And a couple of them go, yeah. Like, which way is up?
It's pretty phenomenal engineering when you think about it, really.
Yeah.
But things can go wrong, and then they can get, you know, they can get right as rain again. So, yeah. So just a public service announcement, you know, it's not always doom and gloom. We don't necessarily need to have, and this came up because we had a, you know, situation, obviously, where, you know, the family called up, oh, it's time to euthanize the old dog, and the whole family came in. And, you know, we're always supportive of that when there's a pet in need and pet suffering. We hadn't actually had an opportunity to assess this pet, and they brought the whole family in, which is fine. That's great. And lucky us, we were able to have this conversation with them about, actually, you know what, it may not be as bad as you think. Took the dog, you know, hospitalized it for 3 or 4 days, and the dog walked home. Like, you know, I walked out the door, jumped into the car. He was fine a few days later. And the family was very relieved. But it's very upsetting, right, as a pet owner.
So all of a sudden, like, you guys are like the greatest people in the world.
Just listen, I mean, the dog was probably going to get better despite anything we did.
Yeah. But they didn't know that.
They didn't
know
that.
And don't tell them that. Don't tell them that.
Well, you know, we
specialized treatment.
Yeah, I mean, some of what we do is treating the pets, and some of what we do is treating the families and managing expectations. And once we can sort of look and go, hey, actually, you know, this dog is not showing signs of a stroke. This dog is not showing signs of a brain tumor. I really think we just need to give it a little bit more time. And if you can, you know, bring your head around that, you know, then, hey, you get to take Fido home with you in a few days.
I can see in a few years what the likes of you do, Kimberly, becoming a double degree. One half you have to do it, learn veterinary science, and the other half's human psychology. After the people.
Yeah. There's quite a bit of that in it, actually. You know, people always get into veterinary science because they love animals. I think, and the education is certainly starting to put more emphasis on what we really do is manage people. We treat animals for sure. But, you know, because all of the pets that we see really come attached with human families and human owners and things like that, there really is quite a lot of that. And so there's certainly much more emphasis in veterinary education these days around communication, around maybe not so much around psychology. That might be helpful, but certainly about managing expectations and, you know, it's an emotional time often. If you have a suddenly sick pet, that's pretty emotional for everybody, and particularly these days where lots of people have pets instead of children, or, you know, as their children, or their children have, you know, grown up and gone away. And so now they have pets as the next generation of, you know, children. And so, there's a lot of emotions involved.
Yeah, for sure. I guess as long as you don't become the veterinary version of Doc Martin, you'll be doing okay. And a big good afternoon to Hannah at Wall's End. You've got some concerns with your senior cat. Take us through what's going on there, Hannah.
Hi. So, yeah, It's a little awkward to talk about, but I figure it's important. Over Christmas period, my older cat, he's 10 now, started having issues. He was not going to the bathroom at all. So I took him to the vet, and they ran a bunch of tests. Did blood tests, ultrasounds. They didn't find any cancer, like lymphoma or any colon. Mm-hmm. But they diagnosed him with idiopathic hypercalcide and just kind of told me to increase his fiber uptake as much as possible and monitor for any reoccurrences of constipation, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's been going really well, but I've noticed his bathroom habits have changed quite a bit. He'd go to the bathroom once or twice every, you know, three times every few days, mm-hmm. whereas now it's, what's the word? It's only a few days, but it is quite a large amount all in one go.
Yeah, okay.
And I'm just worried if I'm doing anything wrong.
Probably not, but constipation is certainly a possibility with these guys, which is why we want to try to be increasing the fiber, trying to use some stool softeners, because cats, on top of that, once we start to get constipation, either recurrent or chronic, their colon likes to get stretched and then they sort of lose muscle tone and then they can get what we call megacolon. So probably what you're seeing is still a symptom of the hypercalcemia. What are you feeding? Like, how are you adding pumpkin or are you adding Metamucil or feeding a special diet or?
I was recommended to add in psyllium husk.
Yes. Yep. Yeah. So
I've been adding that in.
Yeah. And so, you know, it might be psyllium husk is one of those things that we sometimes have to play with. So if we're not getting a regular, ideally, we'd like to have a poo a day. Certainly a poo every second day would be good. So you may need to play with that, the psyllium husk a little bit. I find like adding just some cooked pumpkin for some cats, particularly if they're a bit gutsy in terms of, you know, they've got a good appetite. You can do that in addition to some of the psyllium husk. And sometimes that will keep things nice and soft and moving a little bit. So we do have to sometimes play with it, you know, dosage wise a little bit, you know, go up a quarter of a teaspoon at a time, that sort of thing. We don't obviously want a sloppy stool, but we also, you know, don't want it to be sort of so infrequent that he's backing up and getting uncomfortable. And cats will often, when they get constipated, they'll often show it first by vomiting. It's like, you know, things aren't moving through the back end, so it starts to come back up the front end. So that's often a concerning sign. And we've had really good luck in our clinic. Sometimes different cats sometimes tolerate different things better. So like unflavored Movicol, like it's a fiber supplement. It's like a water dissolvable fiber supplement, increasing the amount of wet food that the cat is eating so that he's better hydrated. We used to think with cats that if we fed them dry foods, that they would just drink more water and stay hydrated. But they've clearly shown that cats that eat predominantly dry foods are always a little bit more dehydrated than cats that get a good proportion of wet food in their diet. So feeding, you know, more wet food, less dry food, still adding the psyllium husk or trying something like Movicol or the other brand that's gone out of my head. If they're really bad, we'll use lactulose. We can, I'm sure your vet can provide a dose of lactulose if you feel like there's any straining happening. But pumpkin is often a really good option too. And then just keeping a close eye. I know it's like you're going to be intimately in tune with what your cat's litter box habits are. But yeah, it's pretty important because secondary megacolon for these guys then becomes like a whole nother problem that we don't want to have to manage if we can avoid it.
All right. Thank you so much.
But it's not, you know, it's nothing you're doing. It's just, a result of the condition that your cat has, which is not very common, but is, you know, certainly known and you know, definitely happens. So,
All right. Well, thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
Cheryl Shaw is here along with Dr. Kimberly Earle. And we've kind of reached that time where we give you the chance to maybe expand your family a little bit with our dog and the cat of the week. Look, who wants to start, ladies, with Jax? Who wants to have a crack at Jax?
Oh, well, we've got little Jax here. Jax is a 6-year-old Mastiff Cross Labrador. He's a nice-looking little brown, well, not so little brown dog. Says he is still searching for his forever home that he's never had. He's spent much of his life without stability. And now as he's entering his golden years, he deserves a safe, loving place to finally settle. He is fully house trained. He knows how to use a doggy door. He knows his basic commands. He likes to have some routine and enrichment and some regular exercise. They say since coming into care, his barking has reduced significantly. He was probably just really bored and lonely. He's highly food motivated, which is always great for training. He loves treats. He loves mangoes, strawberry. Oh, he's a vegetarian. He's not. Mangoes, strawberries, peanut butter, and a Kong. He likes to have some marrow chews. They feel like he would do best as an only dog or maybe with another calm, submissive dog of a similar size. He can be reactive on lead around dogs, and so his size, you know, like you need to have somebody who's, he's not, don't give him to your grandmother. Like, he's a pretty big dog.
For sure.
I'm sure he's gentle, but like, don't give him to your grandmother. No, don't want any broken hips here. So careful management is important because, yeah, he's a bigger boy. He says he's gentle, sometimes forgets how big he is. Loud voices, storms, fireworks, high energy environments can be overwhelming for him. And so when he's a bit worried, he seeks out a nice, quiet, dark space. So, you know, that's the kind of dog which is going to really suit a home that can provide some nice safety, a nice crate that he will enjoy. It says that ideally he needs some 6-foot fencing, a calm, consistent routine, and people who genuinely include him as part of the family. He would suit a couple, a family with older kids, or a single person looking for a loyal shadow. So, yeah.
Yeah,
you're looking to add a nice big dog to your house?
Look, Jax is the one. And if for no other reason, look at the photo. If you head up to the website, you'll see it. He has his paw almost on the camera, doesn't he?
Yes, yeah. He's like, shake me,
exactly.
Shake my foot.
So you can check out Jax. And if you're looking more to add a feline to the family, how about this black cat by the name of Magnus? How gorgeous, ladies, is Magnus?
We love a good black cat, don't we?
Yeah, absolutely.
I was just saying they're nice and settled usually. They're not too feisty. So this is Magnus. He is a domestic short-haired 3-year-old male. He's got a sweet and gentle nature. He's a little bit shy at first, but once he feels safe, he will come out, and he's a really kind, loving soul. He's still pretty playful for 3 years old, loves some toys. Like when he's done playing, he likes to have a nap in his window hammock. That sounds pretty good. They say,
where do I get
one
of those for myself?
He would be suitable for a home that has children, as long as they are respectful of his shyness initially and can give him space. So that's probably we're looking at, like, maybe not toddlers, but slightly older kids. He would do great as an only cat. They haven't really tested him with other cats or dogs, but they don't think, you know, they think with a patient and slow introduction, he might be fine. He's all ready to go. A lovely black cat with some pretty yellowy green eyes. And yeah, it looks pretty chill in the photo. He's just
They may very well get snapped up very quickly. So you can check out Jax and Magnus at the Pet Chat page at 2NURFM.com.au. Ladies, we've made it to the end. So hopefully we've solved a couple of problems out there. When I mean we, I mean you all, not me.
Thanks. You solved the problem of the buttons.
That's easy. Well, it was easy this week. That's fine. Dr. Kimberly Earle, thank you very much.
Thank you. I think I'm back next week. So.
Oh, well, we'll be glad to hear you next week. And Cheryl Shaw, as always, the pleasure has been ours.
Thank you.
Pet Chat back same time next week at 2NURFM 103.7.